The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
Welcome to Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We're located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania, but this morning we are as close to you as your own home. Wherever you are on your spiritual journey, wherever you are on your life journey, we welcome you. Whatever your gender expression or your gender identity, we welcome you. Whether you're old or bold, we welcome you. Whether you're bold and old, we welcome you. Whether you're tech savvy or just savvy, we welcome you into our ever-expanding circle of love and compassion. If you're visiting us this morning for the first time, you'll find a link to our virtual visitor card, and you can click on that link and let us know a little bit about yourself so that we can get to know you, and we'll send you more information about us as you request. So our opening words are taken from a song, from Holly Near. It says, I am willing and I am open, for to be hopeless would be so strange. It dishonors those who have gone before us. Lift us up in the fire of change. So maybe you can repeat that after me. And I want you to think about who are the people in your own life, your own personal life, or in history who have gone before you to give you some sense of hope. I think about my mother and her family who resisted the fascist movement within Italy. I think about Rosa Parks. So take a moment and think about those people. Invite their spirit and their hopefulness into this room as you repeat after me these words. I am open and I am willing. For to be hopeless would be so strange. It dishonors those who have gone before us. So lift us up, lift me up in the fire of change. So may it be. Linda Stopher will now light our chalice and do our chalice reading this morning. Linda.
Our chalice lighting this morning is entitled Whisper of Our Souls and was written by the Soul Matters team. Come, let us listen with new ears. Do you hear it? That voice so familiar, yet far, yet still far. Less a longing and more a knowing. A whisper of something inside that seems to have known us longer than we've known it. Come. Let us listen together. Now Preston Lutweiler will light the peace lamp.
After I light the peace lamp, your response will be, and with all the people of the world. May peace be with you, and with all the people of the world.
Great. Thank you, Preston. Our gathering hymn is Do You Hear? And the lyrics will appear on the screen momentarily. This has been prepared for us by Christine Perry, who will be the song leader, and Isaac Schrader, who is the accompanist. They'll play through the song once, the first verse, they'll play through that and then join in as soon as you're willing and able to do so. Let's sing together our gathering song, Do You Hear?
Thank you. place where you stand, through the sky, through the land. Do you hear, do you hear? In the heights, on the plain, in the vale, on the main, in the sun, in the rain. Do you hear, do you hear? Through the roar, through the rush, through the throng, through the crush, do you hear in the hush of your soul, hear the cry, fear won't still, hear the heart's call to will, hear a sigh, startling trill, in your soul. From the place where you stand, to the outermost strand, do you hear, oh my friend, do you hear? Do you hear all the dreams, all the dares, all the sighs, all the prayers? They are yours, mine, and theirs. Do you hear? Do you hear?
So, in our conversation through story today, I want to tell the story about John Murray, who some have considered the father of Universalism. And this year we are honoring and celebrating the 250th anniversary of Universalism coming to America. Now, I want you to take a moment and maybe in the chat you can write, what is the religion or religions that you grew up in? So some of you are going to type in Baptist, some of you are going to type in Catholic. Let's just see some of the various religions that people have come from. And some, of course, came from Unitarian Universalism as well. So let's see some of those. And I want to talk about those religions, and then I want to move into our topic. So there are Baptists, and they call themselves Baptists because they believe in adult baptism. There are Methodists because of the methodical way in which they carried out their Christian faith, and they have spiritual disciplines that they follow. There are Presbyterians because of the way they organize themselves in assemblies. There are Congregationalists because they call themselves that because of their congregational polity, in which they choose their own ministers, in which they make their own decisions as a governing body, as a congregation. There are Pentecostalists because of their Pentecostal-like experience, Pentecost-like experiences of speaking in tongues and feeling the fervor of the Spirit. And Catholics took on the name to refer to the church that for that time meant it was everywhere, unlike sects of little small sects of religion that had grown in very local places. Mennonites are named after Menno Simons, who organized some of the teachings of the Anabaptist communities that were rising up in his time. So, and Lutherans, of course, take the name of Martin Luther. So I find it's really ironic that Unitarian Universalists, who consider themselves non-theological, some of them, actually in their own name have adopted two theological terms, Unitarianism and Universalism. So Unitarians, historically, are those who believed in the oneness of God, as opposed to a Trinitarian belief of God in three persons. Let's just stop there. We're not going to go into that today. So moving right along, I would just say that Unitarians honored the understanding that Jesus may be of God, but they accented his humanity and his teaching. And their early history in Europe often meant that they were able to connect with others that were Unitarian in their understanding, like Jews and like Muslims as well in their understanding of God. Now, Universalists, they had a theological position as well. Their name is derived from the theological belief that the idea that there is a loving God, and that a loving God would not send anyone into eternal damnation, to hell. With some varieties of understandings among Universalists, they believed in what was called universal salvation, the eventual salvation of every person. So this is the launch of our series, maybe a monthly series during this year, where we're going to learn a little bit about our Universalist legacy and history. So John Murray, father of Universalism in America, became Methodist along with his family when they moved to Ireland. And he was taken by the ideas of the Methodists, and he actually began preaching in Methodist churches. Until one day he came across this book by James Relly entitled Union. And Relly argued for this idea of universal salvation, that a loving God would not condemn anyone to eternal damnation. Murray heard that message, he listened to it, and he found his own teaching and his own understanding being changed. And so he began to teach, but these were dangerous ideas at the time. And he was persecuted and shunned by the churches that he had freely preached in before because of these ideas of universal salvation. Unfortunately, Murray came upon some hard times in his own life. His only son and then his wife died. He was in extreme debt, and he decided it was time to start life anew. And so he decided to go to the New World, to what we call America, in 1770. Now, the story of his arrival to America is a legendary story among Universalists. It turned out that when they arrived on the American shore, that the ship that they were in, that were traveling in, called Hand in Hand, was grounded on a sandbar off the coast of New Jersey, near Good Luck, New Jersey, New Good Luck Point, New Jersey. Now, Murray was asked to go ashore to forage for some food and some other supplies in the town. And as chance would have it, he ran into this man, Tom Potter. And when Potter heard that Murray had been a preacher, he was overjoyed. He was ecstatic because Potter had actually built a chapel on his land for traveling preachers to preach in. And he encouraged Murray to preach in his church on that upcoming Sunday. Now, this is in the old days when people actually gathered in chapels and churches for Sunday mornings rather than over Zoom. So we have to kind of think back to the olden times when that occurred. So Murray, for a host of reasons, decided he didn't want to do that. But then in his struggle and his argument with Potter, they came upon an agreement. If the winds would change and the boat that Murray was on would somehow get dislodged from that sandbar, then he would be there on Sunday and he would preach. Guess what happened? The winds did not change. So on Sunday morning, Murray took his boat into town and preached what is called the first Universalist sermon in America. That date, September 30th, 1770, is considered the birth of Universalism in America. And from there, John Murray became an organizer of Universalist congregations all across America. What would have happened if Murray had not listened to his own response to James Welly's book, Union, and had kind of not warmed his heart to this understanding of an ever-loving God? What would have happened if Murray had not listened to his resistance to never preach again? And what would have happened if he had not encountered Thomas Potter? What if the winds had not shifted? So those were a poignant moment for Murray, but also a poignant moment in the history of Universalism in America, which became a movement that in its later development understood salvation as happening in this life, on this earth, and that all were deserving of their basic necessities. So they got involved in labor movement, in the suffragist movement, and all kinds of reforms during their time. Their conviction around universal salvation became a conviction in what they called the assurance of the ultimate good, triumph of good. And so John Murray learned to listen, and may we listen across time to the echoes of that great message, that love is available to all, that love will win, and that there will be an ultimate triumph of good if we roll up our sleeves and we get engaged in making good happen. So our musical meditation is a piece entitled Listening. And so we'll listen to that now.
I'm listening. I am listening. Spirit, speak to me. I'm listening. I am listening. Spirit, speak to me. My ears are wide open. My eyes are now open to see what I may be. I'm listening. I am listening. Spirit, speak to me. I'm listening. I am listening.
In this moment, a
Spirit speaks to me.
I can hear the voices of all my kin.
I'm listening,
singing,
licking,
the tweeting and howling into the wind.
My ears are wide open,
oh, the joy.
My eyes are wide
open, oh, the love
to see
and hear.
For you be
and me,
I'm listening.
In this moment of
silence, I am listening.
I hear
Spirit speak through me.
So the title of my sermon is, Are There More Than 7,000 Ways to Listen? Now, don't worry. I won't be sharing 7,000 plus one ways to listen unless you want me to. Anybody want me to? I almost entitled this sermon, I Can't Hear You. Here's where that title came from. Perhaps some of you can remember watching as a child the comedy series Gomer Pyle, USMC, United States Marine Corps. Some of you might even remember that it featured Jim Nabors as a somewhat clueless new Marine from Mayberry, North Carolina, where he emerged as a character from the Andy Griffith Show. Now, you know, sermon research sometimes does include delving into ancient history. And in this particular way, I realized that the show, which concluded in 1969, had some things written about it. One person said that the Gomer character was described as awestruck by the simplest of things, resulting in exclamations of his catchphrases, Shazam, or golly, or surprise, surprise, surprise. Now, the memory of that character may be coming back to some of us now, perhaps, but what I didn't have to research was the memory that came to me immediately of Private First Class Gomer Pyle's encounters with the tough Marine sergeant who tried mostly unsuccessfully to drill some real world toughness into this small town guy from Mayberry. The sergeant, Sergeant Carter, played by Frank Sutton, was almost the direct opposite of this kind of kind, honest, hapless, and easily awestruck Gomer. Their interactions often played on these differences. And so one thing I remember about the show is that when Sergeant Carter could not get a direct, obedient response from Private Gomer Pyle or a group of soldiers under his command, in other words, if the automatic yes, sir, sergeant was not elicited at the decibel level that the sergeant wanted it to, he would continually say, I can't hear you, until they would belt out at the appropriate volume their response. If only it were that simple in real life. It's not always a matter, we know, of volume when we can't hear one another. It is usually not as immediate apparent or obvious. Oftentimes, it goes unnoticed when we're not really listening. We can't hear one another oftentimes because we really aren't listening. And so, since our focus this month is deep listening in some of our worship services and in some of our faith development sessions, I want to explore with you some of the reasons behind this not being able to listen, this too commonplace phenomenon of not listening. Now, even the theme, deep listening, seems to imply that we're all of us are ready for this advanced course, as if we have listening down. And obviously, we're all ready to move on to that next level, deep listening, but not so fast. Sometimes we just have to recognize what listening is not before we can proceed to our lessons on deep listening. So let me outline at least three things that listening is not. The first is broadcasting. Broadcasting is saying whatever we want to say for however long we want to say it with no recognition of others who may be consequently not have the airtime or even the inclination eventually to even try to say a word or get a word in edgewise. Broadcasting assumes that listening isn't even necessary, because as humans, we are gifted with self-awareness and an ever-developing consciousness. Sometimes we catch ourselves in the act of broadcasting. We see ourselves going on, and we catch ourselves mid-paragraph, and we step back, we regulate ourselves, and we provide space that was previously occupied by just our own precious words so that others may be able to speak as well and to be heard. This self-awareness can sometimes move us to the place of listening, maybe even listening with the same intensity of our own broadcasting. We see this every day. Someone says something that triggers a response in us, and let's just say ourselves, and it's as if we heard lights, camera, action, and before we know it, we're starring in our own feature-length film. Sound familiar? So lesson number one, broadcasting, that is not listening, and it's definitely not deep listening. Another example of what is not listening is what I call hijacking. If you're married or in a long-term relationship or friendship, sometimes we don't really listen to what someone else is saying. We think we can complete their sentences. We assume we know where the conversation is going. And rather than wait to get on board, we end up driving the bus. I am most guilty of this hijacking when I'm tired or restless or just want to get to the point faster than the person speaking to me. So lesson number two, hijacking. That's not listening, and it's definitely not deep listening. Then there's the third example of not listening. I call it sifting. This is much more subtle, and it often goes unnoticed. It's under the radar. This is when we only hear what matches our own ideas. When we only hear what agrees with our own platinum-coded opinions. We can't truly listen because we're editing what we're hearing from another person right on the spot. Sifting may be when we are receiving more from ourselves than from the person who's talking to us. So lesson number three, sifting, that is not listening, and it's definitely not deep listening. Now, if I were to go there, I would say that some of these patterns of broadcasting and hijacking and sifting were a dramatic visual display during the recent presidential and vice presidential debates. Maybe something important was actually being communicated by either candidate. I may be wrong, but the tactics used created so much static that most of what was remembered from the debates is not necessarily the message, but the behaviors of not listening, of taking over, and of broadcasting. But let's not go there. Let's just point out that some of the behaviors of not listening are so commonplace, so much on display in so many corners of our world that putting effort into listening, even deep listening, is becoming more and more of a challenge for us as persons and as a society. The underlying lesson is that in order to be human religiously, to use our capacities for deep listening and the transformations that can occur in ourselves and in others as a result of deep listening, it has to begin with the awareness and the power of interruption. To be able to say to ourselves in the moment, oh, I'm not listening, I'm broadcasting. Or, oh, there I go again. I'm hijacking the conversation. Or, here I am now sifting out what I don't want to hear or what I don't agree with. Mark Nepo, who actually wrote the book, 7,000 Ways of Listening, is a poet and a philosopher who, besides Gomer Pyle, USMC, was part of my research for this sermon. He points out that so much in our time comes down to an archetypal choice between love and fear. This dynamic influences our capacities to really listen and to engage with one another. So his lesson includes this, and I'll quote from him. When fear governs us, we look for sameness, and we confirm only what we already know. When fear governs us, we look for sameness, and we confirm only what we already know. When love governs us, then I don't want you to be me. I've had enough of me. Then I'm safe enough to say, thank God you're not me. Share what you know, and then together we will knit together the fabric of humanity. That, I think, is an important lesson from Nepo. And it's, for me, one of the core lessons, really, of deep listening, being willing, being available, and pliable enough to hear and to listen for what does not already confirm our own opinions, and to engage in the process, the intricate process, day by day, moment by moment, of knitting together our common humanity. For me, this means listening not just to the words and the slogans, but the emotions that underlie them. For me, this means not just listening to the opinions, but to the values that are implicit in them. Not just listening to the tactics of mansplaining or overtalking, etc., but the fears that underlie them. Now, since so much of our communication these days takes place on social media, some patterns have emerged, I think, that display themselves in the social world as well, our everyday reactions. It's as if in our daily life now, we state our opinion and we log off. Or we say some down-putting comment and we log off. Or we speak in sound bites and we log off. You guessed it. I guess that there is a lesson number four as well. Listening is not logging off. Right away, you're probably thinking of the most challenging circumstances in our political climate and in your own family. And I have to say that if someone does not even care to meet us halfway, we don't need to necessarily go there with them. We can just take care of our part, our half of the interaction. But this doesn't mean that in the meantime, we don't practice and cultivate deeper listening in places that are more accessible and amenable to this practice. If we can truly get through the holy mess that we're in right now as a culture, the tonic might actually be deeper listening, not more broadcasting at one another, not more hijacking of conversations, and definitely not more sifting out rather than engaging with what does not conform with our own opinions. The overwhelming, panicky, polarized crisis and traumatized moment in history that we're in right now, we are not all showing up as our best selves. We could blame it on the lunacy and the overwhelm of this moment. I agree. And I also propose that it's not always just out there. If it were only just out there, if it were only those circumstances and those people, then we might not ever recognize our own role in having the capacity to shift the conversation and move the dynamic away from paralyzing and polarizing fear to the possibilities of hope. Transmuting fear in all of the ways that it shows up is a personal and a spiritual task of this moment in our own lives and in history. So let's start with listening between ourselves and another whenever we can. In other words, let's not only think of the worst case scenarios as a way to get ourselves off the hook of the multiple everyday circumstances where deep listening can really help us and can tend the space between ourselves and one another. Ironically, when Mark Nebo sat down to write the book, which became 7,000 Ways to Listen, he realized that he was experiencing hearing loss. In fact, it had been happening over a long time and he kept postponing getting his hearing test. He writes, "Mysteriously, those of us losing our sight are somehow compelled to a deeper seeing, as those of us losing our hearing are somehow compelled to a deeper listening. And those of us losing heart are somehow compelled to a deeper sense of feeling." If we can only keep the rest of ourselves open to the possibility. When he finally went to get his hearing test and then a month later pick up his new hearing device, he realized all that he had been missing out of, all that had been out of his awareness that he hadn't even realized. And now all of this came through to him loud and clear. He could hear more. It was always there, but he was now more available to hear what was before then out of his own awareness. There's no equivalent hearing test for deep listening. We don't have an instrument other than our own heart to know whether we are truly connecting with each other or not. But we do have the capacity to recognize, to realize, and to awaken what is out of our awareness. Being able to accept what is out of our own awareness is perhaps the biggest challenge in truly listening to one another. Being able to dissolve the fear and hear what someone, not just ourselves, someone not like ourselves, has to offer is truly where the sacred act of our own awareness can unfold. The beauty of those moments when we can soften our eyes, unclench our teeth, relax our shoulders, and embody being truly present and open, connected and committed. That is when our musculature becomes less armor and more pliable to the spirit, to love, and to the holy. We can all think of experiences when this has actually happened in our life. So the listening that can happen between ourselves and another has this transformative impact, not just upon the relationship, but also on ourselves. But I couldn't conclude this talk with also pointing out that there's another challenge to deep listening. For some of us, the challenge is not one of listening to others. It is listening within ourselves. Sometimes we can easily drown out our own ourselves more than others. We consume more and more input from outside of ourselves and we distract ourselves. We put our inner voice on mute. Recently, I was learning from the singers and the musicians, the brothers Conan. They usually are kind of backup group for Pink and other kinds of bands. Anyway, they talked about the distinction between the big voice within each of us and the small voice. The big voice within us expresses who we are. It is the voice that is like a mainline from our soul, a direct communication from our soul. It is the singer. It is the dancer. It's the writer. It's the preacher. It's the advocate, the lover, the parent, the person that we are when we feel truly and really aligned to our core values and our own purpose. We all have this big voice within us. sometimes only known as a whisper, a strange whisper within us. And sometimes we're open to it and it guides us. And sometimes we are misguided by what the brothers Conan call the small voices within us that often say, you can't do this. You won't do this. You won't ever do this. You shouldn't do this. On the one hand, the big voice is wanting to be heard, and it has whispers from our soul. It's the lure from within. It's the prompting to go for it. And on the other hand are the small voices that are putting on the brakes, that are slowing us down, that are postponing and inhibiting our full development, our full coming forth. Sometimes when we can't hear the big voice within ourselves, it shows up through someone else. As when the dancer and the poet June Youngblood, in an advising session with me in my early 20s, while she was recovering from cancer, said to me point blank, Larry, sometimes you have to go for broke. That voice still resonates within me as a big voice. It's a voice that kind of pushes me along just a little bit beyond whatever fear or inhibition I might have created for myself. It allows me to kind of take risks and to have hope. So take a moment now. Take a moment and strain to hear or to listen to the big voice within you. That mainline voice from your soul, that message from deep within that's aligned with your core purpose, your core values. What is it saying, even in its whispers? What is it trying to get you to align with right now? How can you move closer to the greatness of your own soul because you dare to listen to the big voice within you that's luring you, that's encouraging you, that's urging you forward in some new ways? Can you begin to hear some of the syllables of that big voice even now? Can you begin to attend to what it is saying to you? What it would say to you if you could hear it more clearly and more directly? Maybe you can continue that listening during this day. But let's turn also to the small voices. Over time, the small voices can take over, and we are stalled in reclaiming our big voice. Think about whatever version the small voices within you might have. Usually they include the words can't, or shouldn't, or never, or will never. Take a moment and reflect on those small voices that interrupt, that intrude and take over and drown out the possibility and the hope that the big voice provides for you. What's your own version of those small voices? If you were to actually just listen to them, but not follow them in this moment. There's a cost to inhibiting the big voice in us. But there is a possibility when we reclaim our big voice and anchor ourselves in more hope and possibility. So deep listening to others also means being able to listen deeply to ourselves, and the two are interrelated. Mark Nepo offers this wisdom, which I'll quote. Deep listening requires letting go of our internal argument with the world. Before we can truly listen, we must exhaust ourselves of our assumptions. We have to put down our ready answers to everything. This necessitates an inner discipline so that I don't finish your sentence in my mind or search my storehouse of opinions for a rebuttal or defense of the world as I see it. Letting go of my internal argument with the world means not pushing off of everything that comes my way. It requires my looking at you as a sudden fish that has surfaced from the deep. It requires bringing you water rather than judgment. Michael Hoppe, the composer and the musician whose music we began with in the prelude today, had his own discerning moment. He realized that he no longer wanted to just mix other people's music. He wanted to create his own. He had hid from this for so long. He had suppressed, put on hold the big voice within him until the moment came when he pushed those small voices away and he began to recognize that he was a composer and that he wanted to play. As I look at each of us this morning, I want to say to you, there is a song within each of us that wants to be sung. Listen to that song. There is a poem within each of us that wants to be written. Attend to that poem within you. There is a dance within each of us that wants to be danced. Begin to feel the movement of that dance within you as it begins to unfold. There is a hope within each of us that wants to blossom. This song, this poem, this dance, this hope may show up in so many ways. It can occur when you listen deeply to another and hear the music behind the word, beyond the words. That's our song. It can occur when you listen for the imagination and find new ways to hear one another and ourselves. That's a poem. It can occur when we move aside and create space for someone else to be heard, and we clear space within ourselves to truly listen to the whispers of the spirit. That is our dance. And in doing so, may we find ourselves exclaiming, as the great wisdom figure Gomer Pyle once said, "Surprise, surprise, surprise." So may it be. So this is the time in our service where we make space for the matters of the heart, where we take a moment to pay attention to the joys that have been welling up in us, or to the sorrows that are holding us down somehow, that are weighing on us in some way. So let's listen first to ourselves, to those joys or those sorrows. And if you care to share them briefly in a sentence or so with this community, we'll provide a time to do that. This is also a time to linger just a little longer in the service and in the sermon, and to ask yourself, what am I taking away from this? What insight do I have? What gleaning do I have from this service that I want to hold on to, that I want to savor just a little longer? So we'll have a time of a musical interlude, and following that interlude, we'll give you a chance to share a significant joy, a significant sorrow, or some gleaning from this service. So let's pause. Let's listen to ourselves first, and then we'll get instructions on how you will share if you want to.
I extinguish the chalice flame and close our service this morning with these historical words, by the Universalist John Murray, who in the late 18th and early 19th century preached a message that included these words: go out into the highways and byways. Give the people something of your new vision. You may possess a small light, but uncover it. Let it shine. Use it in order to bring more light and understanding to the hearts and minds of men and women. Give them not hell, but hope and courage. Preach the kindness and everlasting love of God.
Thank you, Linda. And so now we'll sing together our closing song. The lyrics will appear on the screen, but first we will hear a description of the song by the singer that kind of gives us a way to appreciate some of the meaning that this song could have for us. So we'll hear that, and then we'll sing together the song, Love Knocks and Waits, for us to hear.
Hi, everyone. We continue this week with another hymn from the Teal Hymnal called Singing the Journey. This is hymn number 1029. Love Knocks and Waits for Us to Hear was written by Daniel Charles Damon. This is a beautiful piece that harkens back to those shape notes. It's inspired by Psalms, by the Song of Solomon, and from the Gospel of Matthew. But here's the key takeaway. Love needs an invitation. We forget that whether we're answering the call of love or whether we're letting love guide us or whether we're rejoicing in love, it needs an invitation. It doesn't barge in. So sing along with me or listen and meditate as we sing Love Knocks and Waits for Us to Hear, number 1029. Knocks and waits for us to hear, to open and invite. Love longs to quiet every fear and seeks to set things right. Love offers life in spite of foes who threaten and condemn. Embracing enemies, love goes the second mile with them. Love comes to heal the broken heart, to ease the troubled mind. Without a word, love bids us start to ask and seek and find. Love knocks and enters at the sound of welcome from within. Love sings and dances all around and feels new life within.